Welcome back to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. My next guest has just published a book that offers nuanced and considered analysis of an issue that often gets treated as just a blunt object. Of course, the founders wanted to keep church and state completely separate, many of us say. Others insist this country only exists through the grace of God, who wanted it to be founded by and for Christians. Dr. Stephen K. Green brings scholarship and dispassionate analysis to the pages of Separating Church and State, a History. And I am pleased, glad, to have him back with us today on State of Belief Radio. Steve, thank you for joining us. While it's tempting for us to focus on opposing Bartonian efforts to create a foundational link between Christianity and our national identity, I read you as saying part of the problem is a lack of clarity dating back to the founding of the nation. Is that fair to say?
You're correct. What I tried to do in the book was to not necessarily get polemical, but to address this question that some say that we hear this frequently, that separation of church and state is not listed in the Constitution. So consequently, it is a fabricated concept and should not necessarily be adhered to. At the same time, different surveys reveal that approximately two-thirds to as close as three-quarters of Americans actually believe in some concept of separation of church and state. And so we have this tension that exists within our culture, a tension that exists within the law. What I do in the book is I go back and try to establish the bona fides of the concept of separate spheres. And that goes all the way back to the Middle Ages. It goes back to the Catholic Church battles with the different emperors of medieval Europe. It certainly has roots in the Reformation. This idea of separating the two regimes has a very long history and a long tradition. But that can mean many things, because even though Calvin believed in separate spheres, everybody knows that Geneva was not the most liberal place during his reign, and that certainly Puritans and other Reformed Christians who came out of Calvinism didn't really practice religious tolerance, let alone religious freedom. So it can mean many things to many people.
Was it a lack of clarity in the writing itself, or a lack of agreement among the founders that left us in this situation?
I think there was a fundamental level of agreement among the founders. They had experienced 150 years of repressive church establishments. Now, in New England, they believe that their religious establishment was not anywhere as bad as the religious establishment in the southern colonies, which was the Church of England. But at the same time, they were very restrictive. And there's one thing that I think was a pretty consistent trend, is that we need to disentangle the realms of government from the power of the church. I mean, what I say in this book, and I've said many times in other contexts, is one thing we have to acknowledge, and I don't think can be refuted, is a phenomenal sea change occurred within a very short period of time. In 1776, at the time of the Declaration of Independence, the time that Congress invited states to form themselves as states, out of the 13 new states, 9 of them had some form of religious establishment. Within a short 10 years, at the cusp of the writing of the Constitution, that number had switched. You now had 10 states, because now you had Vermont, 10 states that had disestablished, and 4 states that were retaining some type of establishment, but they were on the defensive. they didn't even want to call what they had as religious establishments. So there's a fair degree of consensus on that level. Where the consensus, I think, broke down is, what does that mean beyond these formal, technical, legal establishments of religion, of preferential treatment for some religion over others? And there was a variety of ideas and concepts out there.
Where did the idea itself originate? Was it a King George thing or something more philosophical than that?
Well, I think for the founders, I've been accused of being a Whig historian, which that means you kind of glorify the founding sometimes. And I actually think we were extremely fortunate, notwithstanding the limitations and the tunnel vision that many of the founders had with respect to inclusion of people of color or women within the political construct. Still, they were highly educated. They knew their history. And they relied extensively on Enlightenment and Whig scholars from the latter part of the 17th century, early 18th century. John Locke was probably the most influential philosopher for the founding generation. And he wrote extensively about separate spheres, about keeping the two apart, and that government had no business in trying to make people to be religious because it violated rights of conscience. And that was an extremely powerful theme that resonated throughout the founding period. And it wasn't just Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, the people we hold out, who followed Locke. I have a 4-3-volume set of sermons from the founding period. And you go and you see these sermons during the Revolutionary War of these Calvinist ministers, and they're quoting John Locke as being the be-all and end-all when it comes to this idea of natural rights and keeping government out of religious affairs. So long story short, there was a fair degree of consensus that establishments were wrong and the government should stay out of religious business. And so within that, you had a variety of opinions on how far that goes one direction or the other.
So could they have done it better, considering all the pressures and disagreements in play? Did any of the founders anticipate the challenges that we are facing today?
No, not at all. I've just finished a draft monograph of my next book, which is a dual biography of Jefferson and Madison on religious freedom. And you look at that, and what you come away from it, and one thing I think is they did a pretty damn good job with what they had, with the headwinds that they were facing. Second, to quote Justice Felix Frankfurter from the 1940s, he called separation of church and state a spacious conception. And what he meant by that, it was a conception that would grow, that would evolve over time and encompass things that the founders had not necessarily considered at that period of time. And in this new book I've been working on, I've probably read at least 200 to 300 letters, correspondence back between Madison and Jefferson over many years of their collaboration. And you can see clearly within at least their conception that they had not arrived at the perfect formula, that this was a work in progress. And not to get off on a different issue, but this is one of the things that really bothers me about original meaning originalists like Justice Scalia and some of the justices who are on the Supreme Court today. They believe they can go back and kind of freeze in time the meaning of certain constitutional phrases and principles and then extrapolate those to the future. And you go back and look, and I don't think there are any in the founding period, not just Jefferson and Madison, who believed in freezing these things in time. They believed it was a evolving constitution.
We need to take another break, but I'll talk more with Dr. Stephen K. Green in just a minute, and later, Faith for Pride and Maureen O'Leary. Now, if you miss any part of today's program, you can hear full episodes of State of Belief anytime on our website. You'll also find links to the topics we discussed this week, extended interviews and transcripts, and an archive of past shows. All of that at stateofbelief.com. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, religion and radio done differently.